Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Man, we got all kinds of stuff to get into. Women's College World Series Championship Series hopefully gets underway tonight. With all the rain in the area, who knows? Game 3 of the NBA Finals. We haven't talked much NBA Finals. Probably because nobody's watching. See those ratings? Yikes.
No, I can only imagine.
Man, Deshaun. See that story yesterday in the New York Times?
I saw someone else came out and has filed a civil suit.
A 24th civil suit, and now the New York Times is alleging, 66 women?
That he has hired over, a year?
17-month span. And it goes into detail with some of these women what he was asking for. Wasn't a massage.
Didn't sound like it.
Where does this put the Browns and obviously Baker Mayfield? Talk there. The LIV Golf. We didn't get to it yesterday, and I was going to ask, what would it take for bigger names to join? Two more have today. Bryson and Fat Pat. Phil. Did you see Phil yesterday?
No, did he make a statement?
He made an appearance.
Where?
At the, it was kind of a kickoff. You see the team names? So there's a team aspect to all this?
I saw something about it.
Yikes, team names.
People were poking fun at it.
Of course. Today, there's a picture right now of Phil. He's playing in the Pro-Am over there with His Excellency, Yasir Al-Rumayyano, however you say that, Saudi Arabia's PIF, which is funding this. Do we ever think we'd see Phil Mickelson playing with the Premier of Saudi Arabia?
No. I'd be a little nervous.
I mean, right now,
what else is in your bag?
Phil starts spraying it around, is that just the end? Does His Excellency just decide, you know what, we're not going to win this Pro-Am, it's all Phil's fault. Bam, see you bye. Get that $200 million out of your pocket back into mine.
Yeah.
So it looks like this is really going to be a thing. And, last week, it's not that it was a joke because they were able to wrangle Dustin Johnson. But then I think there was more questions of, okay, how long can this last? Now all of a sudden it's Phil and Bryson and Fat Pat. Who's next? Ricky Fowler was rumored to kind of be the next guy, he and Phil. And he's definitely left that door open. He has not closed it. And they offered Tiger $750 million, and he said no. So I guess, is this going to be – I think most people have kind of thought, okay, it's a lot of money, but it's kind of a flash in the pan. Are we really going to see the LIV Golf compete with the PGA Tour? And something that happened yesterday, I think, buoys its chances to do that. And that was that statement by the USGA.
And what was that?
Anybody that's qualified for our championship can play our championship. Meaning, these guys are eligible. At least for this year. I mean, obviously, 2 weeks out, it's hard to change stream. Because they literally, and they've mentioned this in the statement, that they have posted qualification requirements that they can't go back now and kind of take their ball and go home. So Phil, DJ, those guys are in. And to me, that was one of the major stumbling blocks to this being a thing. is guys not being able to play the majors, not being able to earn, you know, enough points to say be on the Ryder Cup team, which I think right now the Ryder Cup is kind of out on these guys, which is, you know, a huge problem for Europe. Europe's getting their butts kicked anyways and was going to be getting their butts kicked anyways with the Sergios and the Poulters and the Westwoods, even though they're getting older. But I mean, can you imagine Ian Poulter not being a Ryder Cup captain?
No.
I mean, you want to talk about the lock of all locks. Those two guys being Ryder Cup captains, and the joke was yesterday, not only is Lee Westwood not going to be a Ryder Cup captain, he can't even be a captain of one of these crappy teams. So we'll get into a lot of that. Then also, Clay Travis wrote a very interesting article on OutKick about the idea of the SEC football teams kind of breaking away and becoming for-profit organizations. And he basically came up with the model that would mirror what's happening in the NFL. And so we'll talk about, you know, how that would look, what would have to happen for this all to come to fruition. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts, but I think it's really interesting to think about, maybe not only for the SEC, but then also, you know, does that expand? So we're going to get into that right off the top of the show. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. One of those is to log on to KADSAM.com. The other, download the Paragon app. The app's got everything. Three radio stations. It's got the Penny News, brand new edition of the Penny News. Hit the website last night at midnight. Check it out at thepennynews.com. The print edition will be filtering out this afternoon into tomorrow at all your favorite local newsstands. Go pick up a free copy of the Penny News. Also, Big Elk TV and Paragon TV are in the app when we've got high school sports playing. And, of course, the Skinny on Sports podcast. If you miss it, any of the shows entirely, you can go back and check out what we had to say about any particular topic on any particular day. Man, Jared, it's like we've moved to Seattle over the last couple of weeks.
One would not complain too much about that, I would say. Although, I think Clinton would. There's some serious flooding happening over there. Please be careful if you're listening to us.
Which is not good.
Please be careful. You're in the Clinton area, turn around, don't drown. I've already seen some cars stalled out, floating around in residential streets. I saw some of the street names, so I know those neighborhoods very well. And we hope everyone's okay.
Yeah, there was one.
Can be replaced.
It was literally a river running down the street with houses on both sides.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it's rain, I know. They didn't say never complain about the rain, but when it's flooding homes, I think we can start complaining a little bit. Anyways, but I think this stuff should be done in like 2 hours. It's going to push off.
Yeah, probably going to be nice, and then I think we may be in for sort of the same thing tomorrow with the early morning storms being a possibility again tomorrow.
Well, it is what it is. I mean, it is that time of year. Trying not to complain here. I'm trying not to complain.
You're complaining, Jared. I'm telling you right now.
I'm trying not to.
I'm feeling some complaints coming from you.
It's like when my wife complains about the heat. I was like, yeah, you won't just think about how cold it gets sometimes in this area. So don't complain about it, because then you're going to start complaining about it in another 6 months about how cold it is. I'm same way with rain. I'm trying not to complain because we're still technically in a drought. And that's why we're getting flooding, because the ground's so dry. And, well, that, and we've gotten a lot of rain, and the ground right now is all soaked up. There's nowhere for that water to go. Anyways, during my whole drive down south, every time we drove over a creek or a river, I would look to see how full it is. Red River looked pretty dang full. You know, some parts of Red River, it looks like you just walk from one end to the other. No, it was full.
Efforting the internet.
Yeah. Not
back yet. Somebody may need to plug us back in.
Go reset us. That's probably recycling through.
All right, so I mentioned the article on OutKick written by Clay Travis, and so essentially the idea is one that we have talked about options for the past year now, ever since the Supreme Court kind of stepped in and the NIL began. You know, how does this happen? How can this be regulated? How can this be more of an even playing field or any playing field right now? There's really not one with it's kind of the wild, wild west out there. This issue came right back up, bubbling to the surface last week with Jimbo and Nick Saban going at it from their various viewpoints. And so the idea that Clay Travis brought is essentially because, you know, right now, being associated with the NCAA, these football programs are almost not for profit. I mean, they are not for profit businesses, and that allows them to not have to pay taxes and antitrust and that kind of thing. And so his idea is simple. 16 SEC schools, once OU and Texas get there, break away and basically form businesses.
Okay. 16 separate businesses?
16 separate businesses, but be together essentially like the NFL. So what would have to happen is instead of, you know, the richest guys funding the richest NIL deals and being separate from the school, how about the richest conference band together and essentially make a collective bargaining agreement with the players? That would mean the players would have to be employees of the entity.
Right.
And that would also mean that they would need to form their own union. That way they could collectively bargain these things with the schools. It basically a mini NFL within the Southeastern Conference.
Pretty much what you're describing right now is just a pro league.
And the idea is, why is the NFL king?
Why it's so popular and.
Yeah, why?
Marketing, mainly.
And parody.
That's true, too. Very true.
See, right, and we've both talked about this. Right now, it feels like college football is going down the road of the eventually, and you've mentioned it with Miami, everyone with USC, you know, maybe even SMU in the Dallas area, the richest guys are going to pay the most for the best players. A&M. This is a way to kind of nip that in the bud, but also ensure that the SEC itself and the teams that are in that league are maximizing their value. Which one could argue they're not right now?
Yeah.
The teams especially within that conference. Now, this would also exclude everyone else. And so what he's describing here would be the SEC would just play the SEC.
Okay.
And the SEC would have their own national champ.
Okay.
And everybody else would be everybody else. So that's where it maybe, if something like this were to happen, would it need to be limited there? Or do you maybe expand it out, say, to 32 of the biggest programs from around the country and then all agree to these same kind of parameters?
I think it starts there and then, you know, kind of like a merger of the NFL and the USFL way back when. it kind of forms like that. I could, you know, it could start with the SEC doing that, and then, you know, watch the Pac-12 follow suit. You know what I mean? So, okay. We'll take their model, do the same thing, and then eventually, like, you know what? We'll take your champion. We'll take our champion. We'll meet in Dallas. For a, you know, and we'll come to an agreement there, and then a merger forms. I mean, again, history repeating itself. Look, you know, just like a pro league.
I mean, maybe not even conferences, but for sure, certain schools. I mean, do we really think that Ohio State is just going to stand idly by and not want to get in the mix of this thing?
Right.
You know, the Ohio States, the Michigans, USC, you know, some of those bigger programs. So then, you know, doesn't this feel inevitable in some shape or fashion that we're going to have football, college football, somehow kind of exclude itself from the rest of the college sporting landscape in some way, a breakaway somehow from what the model is right now? Doesn't it feel like that's almost inevitable?
Yes.
And so at that point, then, I think the idea becomes, how do we make it as even as we can? Or do we want to? Isn't that kind of the choice right now? Do we want to try to make it as even as we can for the teams that want to play? Or, hey, if you want to play, you got to pay.
I think it's the latter. Yeah, something like that.
If you want to be able to compete, you got to pony up and get her done.
Yeah. We don't have time for the small fries. The big dogs who are making the big money can be a part of this. So, yeah, money talks. I could even see a world where, or a college football world where, say those models happen. Say SEC does what we're talking about and Pac-12 does. You mentioned Ohio State, Michigan. Name some other big boys we're leaving out. Notre Dame. Shoot, Miami, Clemson. And they just go, but because of their affiliation with their conference, like, no, what, we're holding pat. We're not going to do that. We're still going to be, we're going to be the Big Ten. We're going to be the ACC. Like, okay, see ya. We want out of the Big Ten. We're going independent. So we can do whatever we want to do.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, the SEC is the brand. The Big Ten is the brands
sure.
that matter in this. And so do we start seeing more of the Notre Dame scheduling philosophy, or, you know, they're kind of ACC and they're kind of not. Football, I mean, everything else is. Football is kind of there and kind of not because of that, the prestige that they got. But let's be honest with ourselves. Notre Dame's leaving tons of money on the table with their current deal with NBA. Everybody thinks, oh, yeah, well, they're making all this money with NBA. They're not even close to what the SEC schools and the Big Ten schools are drawing a year from TV. Yeah, they have that exclusivity of sure. being on NBC and the prestige of that. I just don't think that if something like this happens and the SEC seemingly is the first ones to kind of do it, I just don't think that the rest of those big boy college football teams are going to not want a piece of it. Because now you get into, okay, who's the national champ?
Yeah, there's going to be, like, who recognizes who is the national champ?
Correct.
Yeah, there's going to be issues there.
And is anybody really going to accept a team outside of the SEC as the champ? You were the best of the rest, but you didn't play these guys.
Right.
Especially with what's happened over
and
the last 15 years.
Argument ever since the SEC has become dominant is, like, there's been some teams, not a lot of them, that have won national titles outside the SEC. And then there's always that argument, like, well, that's great, fine and dandy. They steamrolled through the Big Ten, but Ohio State wouldn't survive the SEC. They'd lose 3 games every year, stuff like that. There's always going to be that argument.
Yeah.
So you could, yeah, I see, yeah.
Will
they truly be recognized as a national champ?
It's really interesting.
It is interesting.
It's really
There's a lot of unknowns, a lot of questions. It's uncertainty can be scary, but sometimes it can be exciting. The uncertainty of this NIL stuff, it's scary of what it could do to the game we love, that we love watching growing up, the pageantry of it all. But it's exciting, too, that can give us some cool scenarios, could give us some cool, fun matchups in the future in different opportunities for different kids and, quite frankly, some kids that need money. But it's just a lot of unknown. We could ask all these questions, and then there's really no clear answers. There's like 50 answers or paths. Well, this, that, what if we do like this? Well, this, or this could happen. It's crazy. I find it fun now. I know there's some olds out there don't. they don't want nothing to change. I get that. Totally get it. But I don't think the sanctity and the pageantry of college football is going anywhere. Not immediately. It's just evolving right now. But that's an interesting thing from Clay Travis. He's a smart dude. Is it too close to a pro model that, you know, that takes away that pageantry of the game? Does that make sense? We brought up the question, was it yesterday or the day before? When are we going to see a player strike? It was Monday. You know what I mean?
That's
true. We've kind of seen forms of it. I've mentioned it during, you know, bowl season, but players opting out. Is that a form of striking? One could argue it is or isn't. But that's stuff that we could see. That's the risk of this.
Yeah, there's no doubt. But I think it does accomplish that model that he set out. It's basically the NFL model. It does accomplish the one thing that I think everybody is kind of striving to do, and that is somehow equal the playing field with the NIL. And so by creating
I applaud that, trying to find,
you know, a common ground to where it's not, because, you know, right now he talks in the article about, you know, the facilities, for instance, and not the wasted, but the wasted money that goes into these college football facilities because it's generating so much money, but they have nowhere to spend it. You know, in the facilities on college campuses, on the big time college campuses, are better than anything the NFL's got, but it's because that's where they spend the money. The NFL's spending their money on the players and the salaries and the contracts,
right?
College football's not able to do that right now. And so now you've got, I mean, he mentions like waterfalls in weight rooms. I mean, it's so ridiculous.
But, you know, kudos to them.
I mean, they have to spend it somewhere.
It's a form of spending it on the players.
And it is. And, you know, the crazy game rooms and all that kind of stuff.
The living quarters that they live in. Sure. And the weight rooms you mentioned and the indoor facilities, all that. It's for the players. One could say that
it is.
It is going to the players.
No, there's no doubt. But would you rather waste your money on that or use it to pay players is kind of the catch 22
there. Chicken egg thing too.
That's right.
Because if you
stop
spending on facilities, those players don't want to come play for you.
Yeah, but everybody's got the same thing. That's what I'm saying though, because everybody's, you know, what you got's what you got, and you can make improvements here and there, but everybody is going to be forced to spend their money the same way. Because there's essentially a salary cap,
right?
With what you're generating, it's a really interesting idea, and it does make the playing field equal in that way that the NFL does, and then it almost becomes then more of a form of, okay, who can coach with the guys they bring in?
That's true.
And who, you know, do these schools have to start getting some kind of little salary cap wizard to figure out where to spend the money and all that kind of thing? Interesting idea. I don't know if it's going to go quite to that point as far as unionizing players and collective bargaining agreements and all that, but I do think there's going to be some sort of breakaway at some point.
Yeah.
With college football. All right, LIV golf. This thing is happening. They're literally going through. the Pro-Am as we speak. Just this week, as we suspected when the first list of names came out last week, there was one spot for one guy, and sure enough, it was Phil. Did you get to see him yesterday?
No.
That dude went into the press event. He's a captain of one of the teams. I mean, like the man in black with a mustache. I think he was like channeling his inner Maverick. He's clearly watched the movie. I'm talking about black pants, black boots, black belt, black shirt, black jacket. Not like a sports coat. Like a bomber jacket.
So is he embracing the bad guy role?
I'm wondering if that was a sign.
He's like, if you want me to be the bad guy, I'll be the bad guy.
Kind of like, you know what this reminds me of? And I've seen this comparison a bunch. Like the NWO.
Like when
the Hulkster.
Turned into Hollywood. Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
And what did he wear?
All black.
All black.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was fully ready yesterday to ask you what's it going to take for more big names to join. And before we could even get there, it's already happened. Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed are both two guys that are now playing LIV golf. So now maybe here's the question. What keeps this from really becoming a problem for the PGA Tour?
The PGA is going to have to concede the fact that these players want to do both in a way. Some want to do only one thing. They can't fight it, or they will. Does that make sense? You can't fight the inevitability of players that are going to want to do both, or just go, you know what? Thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to go over here and make a lot more money. There's that, or the PGA is just going to have to match the pay. Can they? I don't know. Think they can?
No.
No, not at all.
Not this up front stuff.
No. What say you?
I think you're exactly right. I mean, they tried the power play. They tried the bully move. They tried, you know, whatever they could to keep this from the genie from getting out of the bottle. But at this point, I don't know if there's much else they can do. I mean, they're lucky as hell that Tiger, even in his battered state, I mean, what? They're lucky that he has the reverence for and the respect for and the admiration of the PGA Tour, because who better this format for than battered up Tiger Woods? Three rounds instead of four. I mean, you know damn well he can have a golf cart if he wanted one. They're not going to tell him no. So, you know, that is the one thing that's kind of still in the PGA Tour's favor, is that guy hasn't jumped ship, which I don't know that he would. Doesn't seem like it. It seems like there's definitely, though, starting to be kind of a these-ins and those-ins right now. And if you're the, you know, but the money, if the money that's reported is that, I mean, there's like, you know, Dustin Johnson lost his deal with RBC, his endorsement deal with RBC. Who cares? He signed a $150 million contract. Nobody cares.
Yeah, he don't care.
He doesn't care about that $2 million a year. He just signed for $150. So, I mean, the money is so outrageous that I don't think the PGA Tour can do anything about it. And especially if more guys, like we saw today already, if more guys start gravitating that way, I mean, the tour, I don't know if it could win a bidding war or not. Doesn't seem like it.
No. So learn to coexist?
I think that's your only choice.
So does that mean...
Unless, here's the one thing, the one caveat that could turn this back in the tour's favor, and it's not happening, and I mentioned the U.S. Open that's coming up next week at Brookline. They weren't able to get out in front of this to not allow the players that have already qualified to take them out of the field if they've decided. So what's going to happen, the one thing that I think could go back in the tour's favor here is if the major championships, which aren't the PGA Tour. That I think people are getting that twisted up too much and not realizing, listen, the PGA Tour doesn't set parameters of what any of the four majors does. That's totally separate thing. Mm-hmm. You know, with the USGA and the RNA, the Masters, you know, Augusta National as a club, and then the PGA of America isn't the PGA Tour. So if those four entities that are separate from the tour, but also commingled with it, obviously, because it's, you know, tour quote unquote events, but it's kind of outside of their scope. But if they can get together and change going into next year, it can't happen this year. It's too late. But if they can change either qualification processes or what have you to exclude anyone that's played LIV Golf, then you might be able to turn the tide if you're the PGA Tour back in your favor because of, you know, legacies and that kind of thing for these guys, especially the younger ones that are still trying to build that resume and build their legacies through winning majors. In my mind, that's the only thing that keeps this from being competitive tours against each other. Mm-hmm. With the money being so big. Now, the other thing is, what if the Saudis just say never mind? Then the money goes away. Then these guys have to come crawling back on their knees to get back to where they were just a couple weeks ago, being members of that tour. And you would think that quite honestly, the PGA might just kind of slap them on the wrist for you know something, and then get it back, because it does no good for the PGA Tour not to let them play if they're just out there floating in the wind, because then their quality isn't as high, and that goes back to contracts they can sign and advertising dollars they can generate through their events.
Should the PGA reach out to the LIV people and ask them, listen, out of respect, can you please – you don't want overlapping events is what I'm saying. So scheduling is the next question of, you know, listen, please don't schedule an event during our next major.
Never going to happen.
You see what I'm saying?
That's never going to happen unless the majors won't let these guys play.
Right.
Because it would be silly for the LIV to schedule an event opposite a major because nobody's going to come play. I mean, if they have a choice to play the Masters, that's another thing. Where is this? It's on YouTube, or
I don't know how to watch this thing. Do you?
I think it's on. I think literally YouTube TV. They have no kind of deals, and that's the one thing as far as recouping money that they're spending. You know, major network TV partners. I don't know who they got, because you know you would think this is a perfect spot for Golf Channel, right? I mean, you see, on the weekend, you see the European Tour and all that kind of stuff. You know, the Corn Ferry, you see the Champions Tour. You know, golf, 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 golf on the Golf Channel. Well, the problem for that is the Golf Channel's biggest partner is the PGA Tour.
Right.
So that's not happening.
A conflict of interest there.
That's right. And so the Golf Channel is going to be miles away from any of this. So at this point, I think you're hoping, you know, an Amazon or a, you know, ESPN Plus, you know, but they're already... They're so deep into the early round coverage of the tour events, I don't know if they can do it. But, I mean, I think your best bet is some sort of streaming service that would pick this up. And then you go from there.
Okay, the competition will begin at 2 p.m. local time, which is 8 a.m. our time.
Yeah, it's like 6 hours.
Yeah. Free live streams available at livgolf.com, YouTube, and Facebook.
Okay, yeah. Let's say I knew it was streaming only.
So I heard YouTube TV. I'm like, well, I'm not subscribing to that to watch this offshoot golf event. But it is free. So all three places you can watch. Okay.
Yeah, could this be an avenue for a Hulu or a Netflix? You know, something like that.
I'm sure the major players here in media are sitting back going, let's see what this looks like before they want to jump in and go, okay, let's cut a deal. Let's broadcast this. But shoot, the way the world is, everybody is streaming anyways.
Yeah.
So probably a good avenue to start. Huh.
It's very
at the end of the day, I think as far as the PGA versus LIV, I think I'd take the versus out of it. PGA just needs to swallow their pride and go, we got to learn to coexist here because we might not ever get some of these guys back.
That's right. And so far, they haven't lost anybody that they couldn't afford to lose, if that makes sense.
Right.
But eventually, if those numbers start to pile up, it's kind of a strength in numbers thing to where, yeah, you didn't lose Tiger, you didn't lose Rory, but look at all these other guys you lost.
Yeah.
I want everybody to get a little homework assignment. See if we can light up the text line for tomorrow. CBSSports.com, Dennis Dodd spoke with Lincoln Riley. He said some pretty interesting things in the article about why he moved, the issues he had in Oklahoma. We can talk about that tomorrow. We don't have time to get into that because I haven't read the whole thing and it just kind of I didn't see it yesterday. But we can talk about that tomorrow. Kind of get college football back in focus. Tonight, Women's College World Series, Red River Rivalry. Game one, Sooners, Texas. OU's beaten Texas 3 out of 4 this season, took 2 of 3 the regular season, and also have already knocked off the Horns in the series. But Oklahoma State had beaten Texas all 4 times this season and dropped both 2 nights ago. How big of an upset would this be if Texas is able to knock off the Sooners 2 out of 3 times and take home the Women's College World Series trophy back to Austin? Where does it rank in the pantheon of all-time upsets?
Because they're unranked and because they're in-conference rivals and because they are your biggest rivals, I equate this to when Oklahoma lost to Kansas in the 1988 basketball championship, men's. Everyone, you know what I mean? That because they took care of Kansas in the regular season and then Kansas caught fire in postseason, went on to win it all against Oklahoma. Kind of similar. It looks like what Texas is doing here. They caught fire at the right time. OU's a heavy favorite. They've had the regular season success against them, although Texas did get them one time. That's what I'd equate it to. So it'd be pretty big. Be a pretty big upset. Because we've said this before. We said before the World Series started, all the pressure is on OU to finish this season with the championship and go down as one of the greatest. And you're seeing articles left and right about it's not just the greatest, one of the greatest softball teams ever, but sports teams ever with how dominant they've been, how many run rules they've had. I've lost count.
It's 40. Like
40. Okay, I almost said it was in the 30s. I know it was 40 after the UCLA run rule. Of course, Jocelyn Allo.
Did you see that? Did you see that graphic they put up with her?
Huh.
Comparing her to the other greats of the other sports?
No.
Okay, so she's got 3 of the top 10 or 15 home run seasons in the history of the game.
Okay.
Babe Ruth has 4 of the top 26 in the history of Major League Baseball. Michael Jordan had 3 of the top 18 scoring seasons in the history of the NBA. And I think it was Gretzky was on there as well. No, it was Brady. Brady had 3 of the top 15 passing touchdown seasons in the history of the league, and Allo's right there. When you put it into that context, I mean, no offense to Billy Ball, and the Sooners were certainly the favorites that night in Kemper Arena in Kansas City. By the way, whoa, that scared me.
That might have got caught on the mic too.
That was close. I jolted. Whoa, that was that strike of lightning was not very far away.
Nope.
Anyhow. They were certainly the favorites, but I don't think not anywhere near the overwhelming favorites like the softball team is and has been all season long. I mean, this would be a massive upset. I mean, I'm thinking more along the lines of Buster Douglas beating Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to the Miracle on Ice. I'm not going to go there because – you know, the Sooners have been dominant for 2 years in a row. I mean, this would be their sixth since 2000, all that. But, you know, the U.S. men's hockey team back in 1980, that's something that I still don't even think you can hardly quantify in your brain how dominant the Russians had been for years and years and years and years. And for a bunch of college kids to beat them, I mean, that's just – it's unfathomable. That's why it's called a miracle. That's why it's called literally – and it was a miracle on ice.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't go there, but it's going to rain if it happened. And another reason why I think it even kind of goes higher up the list is because it wouldn't be a one-game fluke. They'd have to beat them twice.
Yeah.
You know, that's the part where, I mean, you think to yourself, like if you're UCLA, hey, we beat them. And then you go, oh, my Lord, we got to do it again.
Right.
Whoa. So that I think that it would just be a huge upset. Game 3 NBA Finals. Got to lean.
Back in Boston, I know they're like a 3-point favorite. I feel like they bounce back. It is at Boston, right?
Yeah, it's at Boston.
Yeah, yeah. I lean Boston slightly. I think they bounce back. Game 2 wasn't – a lot of people, I think, saw Game 2 as that's the Golden State we thought we'd see in Game 1. Game 1 was an anomaly. That's the Golden State we thought we'd see. And everyone's just writing it off like, okay, they're going to go and win this thing with ease. I think this the other way. I think Boston's like, we took a split in San Francisco. We can beat these guys. We're going to take it back home. We're going to do it again. So despite losing game 2, I think they come home with a lot of confidence. I think they get it done tonight.
Yeah, I heard Jim mention this maybe even on our show. I mean, the one of the easiest bets on earth is in these NBA playoff series where the teams are equal or one team is actually kind of better and they lose game 1 at home. Game 2 almost always goes the way of the home team unless they're just way overmatched.
Or some dramatic injury or something.
Right, yeah. Right. But if all things are kind of equal, it seems like and not only winning, a lot of times it's pretty convincingly. I'm anxious to see what happens. I do believe it goes back to. I think we're going to end up with a 3-game series essentially, because I do believe it goes back to the Bay Area, tied 2-2. I'm just not sure who wins what game. Right. I don't know how the order looks, but I really do think we come down to a 3-game series, and then we start looking up the history of game 5s and series tied 2-2, and it's like a 83% winner if you win game 5, with two of those being in the Bay Area, but also Boston in the midst of the greatest road postseason run ever. I mean, that's what the Celtics are doing right now. One more road win, I think they would have them all alone with the most road wins in one postseason in the history of the NBA. So, you know, one would think if it does go back, one would think Boston would need to win these two and then have, you know, the advantage of 3-1 and, you know, kind of comes down to game 6, right? Everyone around here knows that scenario all too well against the Warriors. But I don't think that's necessarily the case with either of these squads, really. I mean, would you put it past Golden State going into Boston down 3-2 and winning game 6?
What, now say that again.
Would you put? I mean, would you wouldn't be shocked if Golden State went into Boston and won a game six down 3-2 and got it back to a seven, right?
No, no, because yeah. I picked the series in seven.
So, yeah, I mean that's what I
would want, obviously. But no, I wouldn't. That wouldn't shock me at all.
No, you're probably thinking the other way around. But if in the event that Boston was up 3-2 headed home, no one's counting the Warriors out by any stretch of the imagination. And I think the same goes for the Celtics tonight. Be anxious to see how the role players do. Jordan Poole was up and down. Kind of both sides were up and down. The Boston others were great in game one. Golden State's other guys were better in game two. Anxious to see what will happen with all the hoopla around Draymond Green and the way he acted and was allowed to act after receiving that first technical the other night. Is there a chance that we actually see him get booted? I can't imagine Adam Silver being very happy with him literally saying, well, I knew I wasn't going to get kicked out of this game after I got the first one. I can do about whatever I want to. And, oh, by the way, Steve Javy, a former ref, agreeing with him on the telecast. I can't imagine that's, you know, what they want to hear.
Yeah, I think that he's eventually going to get the boot sometimes this series to kind of wrangle him in a little bit.
I do too. I agree 100%. And, you know, Boston, like the Boston crowd has been known
to, oh, yeah.
You know, there's all throughout history, there's been times where it's been pretty difficult, to say the least, on certain players coming into that arena, coming into that to that town after things have happened away from there. You know, Bill Laimbeer clotheslining Larry Bird back in the 80s, and then, you know, the vitriol from there, and then, you know, there's lots of other examples throughout the years. I'm anxious to see who wins.
Yeah. What do you think will happen?
Like I said, I don't know who's going to win which game, but I really believe between tonight and Friday night, because we're finally going to have, you know, just one day off in this series. The only time it's going to happen, but it is going to happen. I don't know who wins which game, but I do believe they split in Boston and they go back to San Francisco at 2-2. I really do. And then if it goes the way that I predicted it would or guessed it would, then that would mean that Boston wins game five and game six. I had the Celtics in six. But, it kind of feels like a Boston bounce back and then Golden State on Friday keeps themselves, quote-unquote, in the series by taking game four. Kind of feels like that to me. But I could see it going the other way.
Yeah.
Very easily. But I really do think that these two games, they're going to split.
Right.
I'm just not sure who wins which.
I was looking this up because you got my interest peaked. OU softball, I'll quiz you. Last time they've lost back-to-back games. Yeah.
I'm going to say the Alabama Championship Series because didn't they win game one and then lose two and three?
2019.
Okay.
February 22nd and 23rd at the Mary Nutter Collegiate. Over in California, they lost to Washington 12-2 and Wisconsin 4-3. It's the last time they've lost back-to-back games. Last time they lost a series.
Oh, Lord, I have no idea.
It's actually pretty obvious.
Oh, the championship series?
I'm sorry, did I say 2019?
Yeah.
2020, and then the season got canceled. But yeah. That was last time they lost back-to-back. Last time they lost a series. It'd be
the championship.
UCLA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was that 19?
That was 19.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then 2020 got canceled, then they won 21. Now they're playing for 20 yeah. and 22.
Again, it would be a huge upset if Texas takes two here.
Oh, I think so, too. I mean, massive, massive, massive. On the scale of some of the bigger ones, if it was one game, it's still a huge upset, but hey, anything can happen
right,
in one game.
Look at the UCLA game.
That's right. But to beat them, but to be able to beat them twice,
yeah,
is a chore that nobody's been able to do yet. Hey, right quick, I've got I don't know if they've... I've got a little tribute here to the passing of a great man. Not this one you're going to hear, but this was his favorite sports guy. And we're going to relive a couple of the best moments from the career of the Intimidator, Dale Earnhardt.
$2.7 million and $1 million bonus for Dale Earnhardt if he can hang on. The No Ball 5 contender, Mr. Restricted Player, Dale Earnhardt comes down and will take his 10th career victory at Talladega.
Three makes in the 500, Chevy, Pontiac, Ford, that's how they run. But Earnhardt has a benefit. There's a slow car up ahead.
And there's trouble coming off of turn two. Some cars get strangled. It might be this. Whoever gets back to the start-finish line, they'll get the white and the yellow together.
Lake Speed and John Andretti tangle as the leaders head for turn number three. Andretti and Spencer got together.
This could be the Daytona 500. Bobby Labonte goes to the outside.
Labonte up high. Earnhardt uses the lap car of Rick Bass as a pick. 20 years of trying, 20 years of frustration. Dale Earnhardt will come to the caution flag to win the Daytona 500. Finally, the most anticipated moment in racing. If John Elway can win the Super Bowl, Dale Earnhardt said he could win the Daytona 500. And if he comes around under caution to complete this final lap, the taste of long-awaited victory will be his. Checkered flag. Dale Earnhardt finally is a champion of the Daytona 500. Look out on pit road. Every man on every crew has come out to the edge of pit lane to congratulate the man who has dominated everything there is to win in this sport, except this race, until today.
The guy I'm talking about, JL.
Yeah.
He painted his golf cart.
Oh, cool.
Exactly like the black number three.
That's cool.
It was cool. It was very cool.
Very cool. Prayers to the family.
You bet. We just got him listening, too. He would shoot me some texts. He didn't like listening to the what he called Pope talk.
Nobody cares about the Popes. Talk about the Sooners.
Everybody have a great day.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.